Greetings, Word Horde.
We're here with an exciting option for you, a version of our podcast without any ads.
That's right. No advertising interruptions, just the content you love, ready to go in your favorite podcast apps like Spotify and Apple Podcasts.
It's another way to support the show, ensuring that we keep bringing you the word stories and language explorations that you love. Try it at waywardradio.org/adfree.
And it's affordable. For just a small subscription fee, you can enjoy Away with Words uninterrupted, except by us.
Plus, it makes a great gift. Know somebody who loves language as much as you do? Give them the gift of words.
Easy to sign up, easy to enjoy. It's the same Away with Words, just streamlined for your listening pleasure. Go to waywardradio.org/adfree.
Support us, support the show, and enjoy an ad-free listening experience.
waywardradio.org/adfree. Thank you.
Support for Away with Words comes from Mozy Online Backup. Mozy protects your valuable computer files against data loss from hard drive crashes, viruses, theft, and other disasters. Find out more at mozy.com.
You're listening to Away with Words. I'm Martha Barnett.
And I'm Grant Barrett. We often talk about the differences between what people say and what they mean and what other people understand. So I was pleased to find a funny little write-up on the blog of a woman calling herself Mommy Nolan. Writing from Logan, Utah, and using her experience with her own children, she writes about the things that she says and what her granddaughter understands. And they're not necessarily the same things. For example, if Mommy Nolan says no, her granddaughter hears maybe. And if she says maybe, her granddaughter hears ask again and again, and yes is right around the corner.
Oh, yeah, that's exactly what happened in our house. The phrase was, can we see about it? Mommy, can we see about it? And she would say, yes, we can see about it. And somehow that was satisfying for everybody. I don't even know if we got what we were asking for, but the answer was satisfying.
That's right. Children don't necessarily understand ambiguity, right? They don't understand gray areas. And maybe is a lot of times skewed towards yes or skewed towards no, depending upon how often they're able to get what they want from their parents.
Right. I'm thinking we usually won, but now that I recall, I'm not so sure.
But there's another thing that happens with communication. In my house, as you know, I have a two-year-old, and he speaks fairly well, but he can't always get his message across. But so what he does is a kind of misdirection. If he doesn't want to do something, he will then ask to do something that he knows we'll say yes to, such as use the potty, because he knows that we're trying to get him to use the potty all the time, right?
Ah.
It's a manipulation. We know we're being manipulated, but we can't say no because we don't want to untrain him from asking to use the potty. So if he doesn't want to go to bed or if he doesn't want to go out, he might ask to use the potty so that we're forced to do the thing that he wants. And then a minute or two later, he'll always ask to do something else that he really wants to do instead of go to bed or go out.
Grant, that's brilliant. That's what dog trainers do. They tell they tell you to interrupt the bad behavior and then give them a different command. That's what your kid is doing to you.
I am training him with a whistle, or is he training me?
No, he's training you. Clearly.
Well, we'd love to hear about cases of miscommunication or misdirection in your household. What are the things that you say that people misunderstand? And what are the things that people do in order to get around giving you what you've asked for? Let us know.
The number is 1-877-929-9673. That's 1-877-WAYWORD.
Or send an email to words@waywardradio.org.
Hello, you have a way with words.
Hi, this is Kelt in Austin, Texas.
Hiya, Kelt. How you doing?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
All right. What can we do for you?
Well, I was getting ready to rent a movie online, and I wanted to make sure I got the right thing, so I checked out the trailer first. And then I started to wonder why we call it a trailer when we view it before we view the actual movie.
Ah, so it's the few minutes that they show us, like all the highlights, the things that are supposed to compel us to pay the full price, right?
Well, or in my case, rent it online.
Right.
Yeah, that's a great question. It's this linguistic relic. You're right. It doesn't make sense if the trailer's first, right?
Right, and in some languages, it isn't called a trailer. It's called something that indicates that it's viewed before the movie. And I guess we sometimes call it a preview.
Ah, right. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yes, what is your first language?
My first language is Danish.
Ah, I see. And so what do they call it?
Well, we call it a vorfilm.
A four film.
Okay.
The film before the film.
Right. Okay. So the answer is you guys are just more logical than us.
Well, I don't know about that, but that's certainly one possibility.
Well, there is an explanation for this, and it's pretty simple. This goes back to the old days of movies when there were double features.
Right.
And you would do the B movie, which was sort of the opening act, the warm-up act for the real attraction. And they would stick the preview of the coming attraction on the end of that first movie, that opening act. So it was the trailer there. And it just became this sort of fossil that stuck.
So it was trailing the movie. It was following behind.
Yeah, it was trailing that first little movie in advance of the real feature.
Gotcha.
Well, that explanation makes perfect sense then. I guess you'd have to have lived through the 1920s to know that.
Well, I didn't, if that's what you're asking.
No, I wouldn't. Well, I really appreciate your help on that little puzzle. Thank you so much.
It's a great question. A lot of people wonder that. You know, they start looking at that word and just thinking, it's like going into an antique store and seeing something that you're sure had a function, but you just don't know what it was.
Yeah, I guess you're right. And it is what happens when you wait for that thing to load on the computer for sure. You sit and think about things.
Yeah, that's a dangerous time, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Hey, thanks a lot for calling.
Thank you, Kel.
Thank you for helping.
All right. Bye-bye.
In French, they call that the bande annonce, B-A-N-D-A-N-N-O-N-C-E, two words, and it just means film announcement.
Ah, well, I kind of like
sometimes
trailer.
It's abbreviated as B-A. Yeah, it works. I like the fact that the jargon has become so entrenched that it's lost its original meaning.
Yeah, it makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. Plus, it's just this kind of clunky word, trailer.
Trailer.
Don't you think?
Yeah, the film boys will never let it go.
No, and I like that.
Well, if you've got a question about something that's bugged you, something that makes no sense about English, wait, that's all of English. Well, give us a call. 1-877. It's not a logical language, right?
No.
English.
Are you kidding?
No, there's plenty to be explained here. 1-877-929-9673. Or send it an email to words@waywardradio.org or hammer it out on your keyboard in our discussion forums at waywardradio.org/discussion.
Hello, you have a way with words.
Hey, aloha, Martha.
Aloha. Mahalo. Who's this?
My name is Eric, and I'm calling from Bellingham, Washington.
Oh, I thought you were going to be from Hawaii.
Yeah, they don't speak Hawaiian there, do they?
Go there a lot.
Okay.
My question's regarding a little nugget of a slang word that had an accompanying gesture and kind of a little rhyme that went with it. I grew up in the 80s, and the word is called moded. And I believe the word was designed to be used like the slang word face.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if someone was, like, monkeying around and they got caught by the teacher, you would say, "Ew, you got moded." And there was a gesture that was, you kind of scratched your chin or rubbed your chin with it. And the rhyme, you want to hear the rhyme?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, sure.
All right. The rhyme was, "Moded, corroded, your booty exploded."
How old were you?
Nice.
I am turning 40 this year.
Well, how old were you when you said moted, corroded, your booty exploded?
I was 11 to 13.
11 to 13?
Yeah.
That's about the right age for that. And so your question is, what up with moted?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I know what it means, why we used it, but how did the gesture and the word moted become that?
Where exactly were you?
I grew up in Southern California in South Bay. Beach community.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And that's consistent with this. Moded is a distinctly Californian expression. I don't know if you Googled this, but if you did, you might have come across the entry I did on my Double Tongue Dictionary website. And we should just spell this. Most of the time, it's spelled M-O-D-E-D, although occasionally people will spell it as M-O-A-T-E-D. One of the theories, and this is the most reliable one, is that it's a form of the word demoted. And by a process known as apheresis, the first syllable dropped off.
Oh.
And so it became moted, M-O-T-E-D. And if you go to – and I'm not hyping my website just because I want people to go there. But, there, you know, I've got an entry for this and some citations that show it being used. But even more interesting, some people have contributed their memories of this word as far back as the early 1970s, people who grew up in California. And so there are a couple people who say, I remember this from the mid-1970s or the early 1970s. There's at least one person who has almost exactly the same rhyme as you have. You're moated, corroded, and your beauty got exploded. They talk about where they're from, so Bay Area and San Francisco. And then they also talk about the meaning of the word. And what we're, you talked about face, like you go, oh, faced. And when I was growing up, we would say burned, you got burned. And a lot of people still use that. And that's kind of in that same way, right, to show that somebody got beaten or that they got embarrassed or that things didn't turn out like they planned, right?
Yeah. And that's pretty much, you know, I guess that's the way we used it. But why did we scratch our chin?
Really good question. That kind of stuff, gestures, are very difficult to track because they're usually not put in print. People usually don't write about gestures in that way. You know, for example, one of the problems we have with the history of the middle finger being used as something offensive is that people tended not to write about it. We tend not to describe these gestures in print because they're not transmitted with words. They're transmitted with the body. And so there's no written archive of this stuff. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a weird one, isn't it?
That's a weird one. And frankly, I don't think any of my contributors, any of the people who commented on the moated entry on my website, I don't think any of them talked about it.
Really? Well,
yeah.
I mean, we'd even use the alternate, scratch the chin, which is basically the same.
You'd do the gesture without the expression?
Yeah, there's very many different variants for it.
Hmm.
It depends on how moated the person was and how many people were watching you moat that person.
I see.
Oh, right. So
I
this
see.
Is interesting. I love this expression because for once we can actually say a little bit about its history because it's within living memory that this term has become popular. And that's – I'm always trying to find more information on this. Eric, if you come across anything new, by all means send it our way and I'll make sure that the world knows. All right?
Well, awesome. Thanks a lot. I
Super
really
duper.
Enjoy your guys' show. Listen
thanks
every,
for calling.
Podcast.
All right. Thanks, Colin. Bye-bye,
bye-bye,
Eric. Talk to us about the slang of your high school years. We want to hear about it. The number is 1-877-929-9673 or send an email to words@waywardradio.org or you can put it on our discussion forum at waywardradio.org/discussion. A while back, we took a call from Jenny. She works at the meat counter at Murray's Cheese and Grand Central Station here in New York City, where I am broadcasting. Her dilemma, Martha, if you remember, was what do you call a person working at the specialty meat counter?
Oh, yeah, I remember that. We got a lot of responses.
We
that.
Did. We all agreed that meatmonger sounds a little too salacious and not very delicious, and butcher sounds unrefined, right? You don't
or a comparative.
Butcher. Yeah, butcher. I don't think so. So we asked for your help, and we got help from you, lots of it, in email and discussion forums and on the phone. Mary in San Diego suggested cold cutlery. Cold cutlery kind of works, though it sounds more like a tool or a place. Scott in Dallas suggested Salieri, maybe, but it also happens to be the Venetian composer who was Mozart's rival, played by F. Murray Abraham in the movie.
Right.
Dale in Indianapolis suggested concierge, as in a
Love
meat
that.
Concierge. The carne is from the Latin word for flesh, of course.
Right.
Brian in Dallas had a similar idea. He said carne carver, so the Spanish word for meat, carne carver.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, there are many, many more. Harrison suggested deli monger. Carl suggested meat maven. Elena suggested meter D.
I like
meter
that,
D.
Meter D.
Pamela offered meat meister. Elise wanted meat maestro. And David in Cape Cod reminded us of the old term tripe dresser.
Tripe dresser?
Yeah. Would you like a top hat on your intestines, sir? Something like that. Tripe dresser. It doesn't really work, but fun. If you've got more suggestions on what to call the person who works at a specialty meat counter, give us a call. 1-877-929-9673 or send an email to words@waywardradio.org.
The thrill of victory and the agony of being stumped by a word quiz. All that and more next on Away with Words.
You're listening to Away with Words. I'm Grant Barrett.
And I'm Martha Barnett. And we're joined once again by our puzzle dude, Greg Pliska. Hiya, Greg.
Hi, Martha. Hi,
Hi Grant.
Greg.
What have you brought us this week?
Well, I thought I would introduce you to a puzzle type that you might find in the Enigma, which is the monthly publication of the National Puzzlers League.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a kind of puzzle we call the false opposite.
Mm-hmm.
And this is how it works. I'll give you hints to two words which are unrelated, but which might, given their prefixes, suffixes, or other parts, be construed as opposites.
Okay.
How about an example?
I'd clue the first word as forward motion and the second word as American legislative body.
Okay,
something Congress.
Yep. Uh-huh. So Congress is the second word. What the false opposite of Congress
is progress.
Progress. Progress. Yeah. There you go. That's an old joke. Congress and progress are opposites. Right. But if that makes sense, I'll give you a bunch of these. You ready?
Let's have them.
Okay. Number one, to pillage or loot, and a short-billed shorebird.
Short-billed shorebird.
Yeah.
Is a duck, a goose.
A gull?
Gull.
It's a less common word than those. You probably
Clover.
Get this. Oh, Mr.
Whoa,
Barrett.
Whoa.
Oh, well, if it's not a duck or a gull, it must be a plover.
It's a plover.
Yeah, absolutely.
Plover and plunder.
And plunder. The false opposite
nice.
Of plover would be plunder because of over and under in there.
Nice.
Oh, very good.
All right. Teamwork there.
All right, here's a little more pop culture one. The male performer of the Quantum of Solace theme song and the School of Rock actor.
So Jack Black is the second one.
Yeah.
But the first one, I don't remember who did the theme song for that. Was it Coldplay or something?
No.
Radiohead?
It was the false opposite of Jack Black.
Somebody, Chris White.
Jack White.
Jack
no,
White.
Jack White.
Jack White.
Jack
oh,
White.
Jack White. Oh, yeah. Sure.
Jack
there we go.
White. Better clued as the guy from the White Stripes, but you can't say
wouldn't
White
it be better
Stripes
as
in the
Jill clue. White, though?
That would be the false opposite. All right, here's a pair for you. Workplace and in reserve.
How about office and on ice?
There you go.
Ooh, nice.
Well done. Yep, off and on are the opposites in office and on ice. You're rolling now. The New York Mets shortstop Jose and the biggest little city in the world.
Uh-oh.
That's what I was thinking. I was thinking sports knowledge. I know there's a team called the Mets. They used to play at Shea Stadium.
Yeah, okay.
It's baseball, right?
Now they're homeless. I don't know.
So here's another clue for the first word.
It's a
point north of San Francisco that is a national park.
Reyes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And the biggest little city in the world.
The biggest little city in the world.
That's the nickname of this Nevada town.
Reno?
Reno.
But what's the – I don't know what the answer is.
Oh, no and
Reno.
Yes. Yes, there
Reyes,
we go.
Reyes, R-E-Y-E-S, and Reno, R-E-N-O.
I was
very
looking
good.
At eyes and thinking, what's the opposite of eyes? Ears?
Right.
Yeah, Point Reyes is a park in the
right.
north of the bay.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. It's on the coast north of San Francisco. Lovely place, actually. Fired as a gun – and vocal reprimand.
Shot and scold.
Yes, very good.
Ooh. Hot and cold.
Hot and cold are the buried opposites in that one. And I've got one more for you here. The period between childhood and maturity, and a drug slangily referred to as crystal.
Okay, meth?
Is it the full name of meth or just meth? No?
Well, do you want me to tell you? It's just meth.
The period between childhood and maturity.
Yeah. Meth, M-E-T-H, and...
Oh, youth.
Youth.
Meth oh, me and you.
Me and you.
Oh, very nice.
Greg, this was a lot of fun. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank
it's
you,
always,
Greg.
Always good to be with you guys.
And if you'd like to talk about grammar, slang, punctuation, or words and how we use them, the number to call is 1-877-929-9673.
That's 1-877-WAYWORD. Or send us an email to words@waywordradio.org. Hello, you have a way with words.
Well, hello. How are you?
Super duper. Who's this?
My name is Sheldon Hubbard, and I'm calling from Dallas, Texas.
Well, hello, Sheldon, and welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks a bunch. I had a question about the phrase turn to as in to get to work. We used it an awful lot when I was in the Navy. I was always where that had come from.
How
it was always
accompanied
by some fingers being pointed at and in the turning motion, as if they were a screwdriver of some sort.
Like you're holding an invisible doorknob or something?
Your two fingers pointed to the person that needs to get to work, and then they were turning like you were turning an invisible doorknob, absolutely.
Uh-huh. And tell us about the context in which you'd hear this in the Navy.
Normally a chief would be walking by or your superior and see you doing the wrong thing or doing nothing and when you need to be swabbing a deck or something. Just idle hand being seen. And maybe an English background, I always thought.
So would the officer say turn to or just make the gesture?
It would be either or. You know, sometimes they just look at you and kind of give you the gesture. And you know you got to get to work.
I find a lot of uses of this in military books and papers and stories about people's time in the service and in a few glossaries here and there. But it's so basic a phrase that nobody bothers to even explain it. Does that make sense? That people feel like it's so ordinary that they don't even – it's not even really worth their attention trying to explain.
Right. You just learn it and you get to work right away on the ship, right?
Yeah. You don't ask an awful lot of questions.
In the Navy, right. As far as I know, the original sense was turned to T-O, like set to or go to, like meaning let's do it or turn to your work. The idea in all those phrases is sort of focusing your attention. And I think that the finger motion is probably a visual pun. Don't you think? Turn to?
Oh, yeah. And two fingers pointed at you.
Yeah. I mean, the only other possible explanation I've seen about this is that maybe people were making that gesture because it's so noisy on ships.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Hey, that's a great idea.
Sure that makes a lot of sense, actually, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's sort of just a little gesture to get you back to work.
Yeah. You guys are awesome.
Oh, we try.
Thank you. Well, I tell you what, you know, we have a lot of listeners here in San Diego in the Navy, of course.
That's right.
We always love drawing on their expertise, so we'd love to hear from you no matter where you are if you've been in the Navy and have something to say about this.
Sheldon, thank you so much for your call.
Oh, thank you guys very much. I love your show.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, if you have a question about language, turn to us. The number is 1-877-929-9673, or you can email us. The address is words@waywardradio.org.
Hello, you have a way with words.
Hello, this is Vicki. I'm calling from Appleton, Wisconsin.
Well, hello, Appleton.
I have a question about a word that I used commonly in grade school, and then it fell out of my vocabulary, but I used it again at work and thought, my word, I haven't used this word forever. And the word we used was kype, like C-I-P-E or K-Y-P-E. We used it when we took something that wasn't really ours, but we needed, and it seemed to not be important to the adults who controlled the resources.
Mm-hmm.
And we never used that word around adults because you didn't necessarily want to bring up what you did.
What we were doing
was lifting things that were in the general neighborhood, not in someone else's houses. And it was clearly understood not to mean steal. And if someone located what you'd carried off, which tended to be materials for building forts, you would, of course, give it right back. And I brought it up to a couple of friends who didn't live near me when we grew up, and a couple of them knew the word very well, and others were completely flummoxed by the idea. And I'm wondering where it came from, how I ever would have learned such a word.
Were your friends also from the same part of the country?
No. I grew up outside Minneapolis. Another grew up in Winona, Minnesota, which is, I don't know, maybe 100, 200 miles. And another one was North Dakota.
Uh-huh. So it's not permanently stealing. It's just kind of appropriating or something? I mean, you give
it's appropriating. And when it came up in my mind just recently, I had gone into an office that was being refurbished from my office and was looking for envelopes. As I went through drawers looking for them, I found a couple of telephone receivers, which we needed in our section. And it is true that if we had put through some sort of a work order, we would get those receivers eventually. And instead, I just sort of picked those babies up and walked away and thought, I typed some telephone receivers.
Right. So not it wasn't stealing because it's still within the company. You're just kind of taking them out of somebody else's control and putting them in your own, right?
Moving
yes.
them.
What would you say if I told you that this word is probably related to another word that's 750 years old?
I would like to know what that word is and where in the world I ever picked up such a word because...
Well, let's answer that in two parts. First, the word that it's probably related to is to kip, K-I-P. And
okay.
it originally meant something like to seize or catch or hold on to.
Mm-hmm.
You can find it in the old work, the English Dialect Dictionary, under K-I-P. And there it's defined as to take the property of another by fraud or violence, which is a much more severe kind of definition than you've given us. But, you know, words tend to kind of blandify and ameliorate over time. They
sure.
tend to become more gentle. The way you learned it is the same way that you learned all of your language. You absorbed it from somebody else. And there is a language of children that kind of passes from child to child. And, of course, you learn plenty of stuff from your parents. But children do learn from each other. You could
This was within the mob.
Yeah, you could have easily learned this from someone thousands of miles away. Children's language really does travel very fast because children know children the same way that adults know adults. So they may seem like they don't know that many people, but all they need to know is one other person to learn a word. And you only have to hear a word once in order to pick it up. So it doesn't take much for a word to travel.
So, Vicky, you kiped the word kipe.
if it seemed appropriate, I would have.
Well, I got to tell you, Vicky, this was a really interesting story about your childhood. I love hearing this stuff. I talk to my wife about these things all the time, and she grew up just a state away from me, and her language was different. We had some things in common, but there were some things that were different. Kipe wasn't a part of my childhood.
Well, I think you had to be in a growing up situation where you could Kipe things.
Oh, believe me, we kiped, but not by that word. My father would often come, "Where's my 9/16 wrench?"
You may have carried more guilt.
All right, well, Vicky, thank you so much for giving us a ring.
Thank you. That's very interesting. And where did the word kip come from?
Oh, it's from British dialects.
Oh, all right.
Thank you. It's got a good, strong history. It predates probably the founding of the United States.
Hey, Vicky, thank you so much for calling.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
We love those questions about words from your childhood. Call us and talk about it. The number's 1-877-929-9673. That's 1-877-WAYWORD. Or you can send us an email to words@waywordradio.org.
Hello, you have a way with words.
Hi, my name is Lee. I'm calling from Elk Grove Village, Illinois. And I have a question for you.
Great.
Okay.
I used to think there was a distinction between the words envy and jealousy, or being envious and jealous. And I hear a lot of people these days saying, "I'm really jealous," when I think they wish that they have what somebody else has. Is that distinction still viable?
Where were you encountering this?
I've heard it on National Public Radio, among other places.
Well, surely they have perfect grammar and diction on NPR. No, this is a semantic issue, not a grammatical one.
All right.
Well, you know, some of the conservative authorities will say that there's a distinction, but I think that distinction is something that they're looking hard for and isn't supported by the evidence at hand, if that makes sense.
Is it kind of a distinction that you're jealous of things that you own or think you own, and you're envious of what you don't have but would like?
It's something like that, but the thing is, jealousy is the troublemaker here. Jealousy is the word that has the more variability to its meaning. So see if this makes sense to you. For example, you could be envious of someone, meaning you want what they have for yourself. So it could be good looks or money or a sexy bod, whatever it is, but you have no claim on it, right? That's envy. Mm-hmm. It's also kind of a form of rivalry. You not only want what they have, but you want to take it away from them, and you want to be better than them because of it. So that's envy. That's kind of all wrapped up in a package there. It's about possession of a quality or possession of a thing.
So it's sort of, I'll have what she's having.
Yeah, I like that. And I don't want her to have it. I want to be better than her. I want to have the good things and deprive her of those.
Do you think it has to do with the deprivation, though? I mean, I can see being jealous enough to drive across the country in diapers, but being envious that the other astronaut got selected to go up on the space shuttle. But not necessarily wanting to take that away from the person, just wanting to go up in the space shuttle myself.
Well, if you look, I can say, again, it's one of those things that you can talk about what you believe envy and jealousy mean, but when you look at actually how people use them when they're not thinking about the meanings, the patterns fall pretty clearly. I mean, by far and away. So let's talk about jealous for a second. If you're jealous, you can also have envy. Envy can be kind of part of jealousy. So that's kind of where we're getting confusion here. And also, when you have jealousy, you tend to have anger and suspicion and wariness. And you're possessive of what you already have, and you don't want someone else to take it. When you talk about the astronaut who drove across country because she was a jealous lover, that's what you're talking about. She did not want somebody to take her man from her, right?
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you can be jealous of someone's good fortune or their belongings or their smoking hot spouse. That's also jealousy. And you can see where envy and jealousy kind of overlap there. You know, English is well known for being a language filled with synonyms and near synonyms. And I think that's what's happening here. There's an overlap. And it's definitely a case where the context of what you say or what you write is going to explain to the people you're communicating with what you mean. So it's always these words don't stand alone. They're heavily dependent upon the company they keep in our language. And that's where the meaning is going to come through.
Envy made the list of seven deadly sins, didn't it?
I think it did. Did jealousy not?
I don't think so.
Envy is enough of a troublemaker. We don't need jealousy on top of it, right? Have we provided you with some clarity here?
Yes, it's a big help. I appreciate it.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you, Lee.
Thanks for calling.
Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Well, your questions about wordplay, grammar, slang, the little subtleties of language, we welcome them. 1-877-929-9673. That's 1-877-WAYWORD. And you can email us to words@waywardradio.org.
Grant, you know the word formication, right?
Something to do with ants?
Right, exactly. It's spelled with an M, not an N, and it means the sensation of having ants crawling all over your skin, formication.
Ah, yes.
It's an actual medical term. Anyway, I was thinking about that word the other day, and it reminded me of a riddle for you.
Oh, let's have it.
Okay. Why don't anteaters ever get sick?
I don't know why.
Because they're full of little antibodies. I told you it was stupid.
Terrible. Well, give us a call with your silly, stupid riddles, 1-877-929-9673, and send your questions about all things language-related to words@waywardradio.org.
Support for Away with Words comes from National Geographic Books, publisher of I'm Not Hanging Noodles from Your Ears, a collection of intriguing idioms from around the world by Jag Bala. Learn more at shopng.com/noodles. You're listening to Away with Words. I'm Martha Barnett.
And I'm Grant Barrett. A nice part of working in language is that I get to help in small ways on the work of colleagues. For example, I contributed a few terms to the brand new edition of Paul Dixon's Baseball Dictionary. It's just been published. A tiny few terms, and I was one of hundreds of people who helped him, but still, it feels good to be a part of something great. I have a copy of the Dixon Baseball Dictionary right here. It's stupendous. Stupendous. This is probably, Martha, the best specialty dictionary I've seen in years. The coverage is complete. The scholarship is excellent, and the subject matter is deeply American. You read it, and you can't be anywhere else but the United States. There are terms like to bang a game, which means to stop it because of the weather, and Bugs Bunny changeup, which is a fastball that appears to stop right in front of the plate. It's named after a pitch thrown by Bugs in one of those old Warner Brothers cartoons. It's so slow that a batter can get in all three strikes on a single pitch. There are old terms, too, like skull, a free ticket of admission, and newish terms like scullion, a very ugly player, which is probably another form of mullion, which means the same thing. I'm not a sports fan. I know very little about baseball, but I know a lot about dictionaries, and the Dixon Baseball Dictionary has slid into home plate for a big win.
Well, it sounds great, Grant, but slud?
Slud.
Slud?
Clearly not a baseball
slud?
Person.
No, I'm afraid I'm not, but...
It's a fake past tense of to slide, and it's often attributed to Dizzy Dean, who talked about somebody who had slid into home plate.
Oh, really? I had no idea. And I remember that Bugs Bunny cartoon, too. I always wondered how he did that.
It's a cartoon.
Yeah, it took me a while to figure that one out.
You were 30.
Yeah, back then. Oh, my. Well, it sounds great. And the name of the publication again is?
It's the Dixon Baseball Dictionary, third edition.
Okay, got to get it. Well, anyway, if you want to talk about baseball slang or any other kind of slang or just words in general, give us a call. The number's 1-877-929-9673. That's 1-877-WAYWARD. Or send an email to words@waywardradio.org.
Hello, you have a way with words.
Hello, this is Clinton from Brooklyn, New York.
Oh, hi, Clinton. Welcome to the show.
Thanks. I actually had a question about the term long johns. A friend and I were playing chess, and long story short, he made a wrong move, and I told him I was getting my long johns in a tizzy, and he wasn't familiar with the word. And I noticed that not many people around these parts say long johns. They say thermals or long underwear. I'm originally from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and everyone back home always says long johns. So I was wondering how that term came about.
Don't get your long johns in a tizzy.
Yeah, we said long johns in Missouri when I was growing up.
It's a great, what shall we say, a great genre of expressions involving...
Words for underwear?
Well, I was going to say ways to tell people to calm down that have to do with their underwear.
Right,
you know,
right.
I mean, I've seen don't get your long johns in a bunch, don't get your long johns bundled up in your britches. Don't get your knickers in a twist, don't get your knickers in a knot. And the favorite one that I grew up with was don't get your bowels in an uproar. So you guys are sitting around a chessboard talking about underwear being twisted.
Yeah, it was really cold that day, too.
Yeah, that's pretty twisted, Clinton. So where does the word long johns come from? That is a great question, and I'm afraid it's one of those origin unknown words. I have seen one suggestion that it might have to do with John L. Sullivan. Do you know the champion boxer from the 1880s, early 1890s? You see photos of him from time to time, and he's standing there kind of posing with his arms out and his fists clenched, and he's wearing what look like long johns.
They have that texture to them, that kind of small waffle texture that long johns seem to have?
Well, I didn't get that close enough to look, but it's definitely the shape, you know, just the kind of tight-fitting, it looks like long underwear, and he's there bare-chested. We could put a picture of him on our website for an example. I do know that there was a newspaper in the 1940s that referred to long johns and said that that's where the name came from, and usually those kinds of stories are pretty iffy, but I don't know. We don't have a better answer for it, unless you know one, Grant.
So he was wearing these?
Well, I don't think that John Sullivan was boxing in long underwear, but he was wearing, I don't know what you would call those things. They're really tight-fitting. They almost look silky trousers.
But there's a bit of a historical gap there, right? Because the long johns term comes from the 1940s. And Sullivan was a boxer in what period? The 1880s or something
1880s,
like that?
1880s, early 1890s. Yeah.
Right. So that is entirely too large of a gap for term to lay dormant and then suddenly pop up in the 1940s, at least as far as I can imagine.
Yeah.
Unless there was a movie made about Sullivan, and maybe it's from the movie Sullivan instead of the original, you know? I don't know. It's always hard to say on this kind of stuff. But, you know, that is an answer. I don't know is a good answer because you could find many kind of harebrained theories about this that might lead you astray. And we're actually giving you the straight dope, which is nobody knows. If they tell you they know, they're full of it. And you can have them call us and we'll tell them so.
So, Clinton, who won the game?
That'd be me.
Uh-huh.
All right. Well, Clinton, thank you so much for giving us a ring.
Thank you very much.
All right.
All right. Best
Bye-bye.
Of luck to you. Bye-bye.
Take care.
Well, if you've got a question that you don't want an answer to, give us a call, 1-877-929-9673, and you can also send it to words@waywardradio.org.
Hello, you have a way with words.
Hi, this is Maeve, and I'm calling from San Diego.
Maeve?
Yes, Maeve.
Well, welcome, Maeve. How are you?
Thank you. I'm doing very well.
What's up?
So I'm calling today about a word that actually occurred to me because of a word that I'd heard talked about on your show. So on your show, you had previously talked about the word janky. Mm-hmm. And from that, I thought of a word that I'd heard of in Ireland, which has a very similar meaning, which is banjaxed.
Banjaxed.
Banjaxed, yeah. And how I would spell it is B-A-N-J-A-X-E-D, banjaxed.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's how most of the dictionaries have it.
Ah. They do.
So So we were talking about janky meaning?
Meaning something that doesn't work as it was designed to.
Uh-huh.
Well,
uh-huh.
It's a little different than that. Janky usually just means inferior, bad, or weird. So it kind of could encompass something that's broken or malfunctioning.
Mm-hmm.
Banjax tends to mean busted or intentionally broken or ruined, right? Like you can banjax your knee or you can banjax a window or banjax a party by ruining a party.
Well, in terms of how I heard it used in Ireland, like an old car that was very near breaking down would be called a banjax car. Or if you hurt a body part, that body part would be banjaxed. But it's not necessarily something that was done by intent.
Ah, I see. There we go. Yeah. As far as banjax being the origin of janky, there's a big, big gap of decades there.
Oh, okay.
Janky doesn't really start to show up until the early 90s in the United States, and there's the problem of banjax not really being an Americanism. People might know it here.
I've never heard it.
Yeah, I bet maybe fewer than 1 in 100 people in the United States would know that term.
Okay.
And they would probably be expat Brits like you.
Okay.
Are there different forms of it as well? I'm going to banjax your knee if you aren't nice to me, or?
I suppose I have heard it used in that sense, but it's normally used in the past tense when some damage has
Something's messed up.
Happened. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. I see.
You were raised in Ireland?
Yes, correct.
Which part?
In Dublin, and I've been here in San Diego for about 10 years now.
Okay, so long enough that you know us Americans in our evil ways, but short enough that you still kept your accent.
Sure, sure.
But you don't keep saying banjax, right? Because people just look at you funny?
Not too often, no. I mean, I try to curb the amount of Irish phrases that I use.
Makes you interesting.
I do too. But we're language people, so maybe that's I want the full force of your foreignism to come out, you know, when I'm talking to you.
Okay.
All right. Well, I hope we've helped some, Maeve.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Super duper. Thanks
Bye-bye.
For calling.
Bye.
Banjaxed. I love that.
B-A-N-J-A-X. That is indeed the way that it's spelled. It's almost always, more often than not, used in the kind of adjective form as banjaxed. So something can be banjaxed.
Uh-huh. I like it.
Ruined or broken or screwed. I mean, if we can use that on if Barack Obama can say it on 5 national television networks, we can say it on public radio. Banjaxed is not a bad synonym for screwed or screwed up.
I like it.
If you've got a question about a foreignism or something that you learned when you were a child that nobody seems to say anymore, give us a call. The number is 1-877-929-9673. That's 1-877-WAYWORD or pop us an email to words@waywardradio.org.
Talking on the show about the Apple Corps Baltimore game.
Mm-hmm.
Remember
yes,
that?
Nevermore, forevermore,
right,
something like that.
Right,
yeah.
Right. And all the little variations. You eat an apple down to the core and then you yell out, Apple Corps. And then the first person who says Baltimore gets to designate which direction you throw the Apple Corps, ideally at one of your friends or family members. Boy, did this ever generate a ton of email and phone calls.
Yeah. I think that you and I are the only people in America who never saw the Disney cartoon.
My gosh. Yes. This is amazing. A lot of people wrote us to tell us that they learned it first from a Donald Duck and Chip and Dale cartoon. And we had so many people send us the link that we decided that we would put a link on our website so you can see it too. And I have to add a little caveat, which is that there's some sort of, you know, ethnic stereotyping going on in that cartoon, as happened with a lot of the cartoons. Because in this particular cartoon, Donald Duck holds something explosive and explodes, and he falls all the way through the earth to China. And so the Apple Corps Baltimore game is actually played with somebody way down the hole in China. And you can imagine how that went. But anyway...
Yeah, we're in a different era and a different time.
Right, different sensitivities and that kind of thing. But so many people wrote to tell us about this cartoon that you and I missed that I thought we would put it on the website anyway.
Right, and it's good to have it. It's not the oldest use of it, but it's definitely a place where I would call that the popularizer. Right?
Yeah, yeah. We actually got a message on our discussion forum from somebody who wrote, "I'm 63 years old. I grew up in Southern California, and as a child in elementary school, this was a common game. Many of us had apples in our lunch sack or lunchbox, and when we finished eating, we played Apple Corps." And she says her mother also told her that her mother played this game as a child. She was born in Illinois in 1910. So it does seem to go back quite a ways. But I think it was Chip and Dale who, as you said, popularized it in the minds of a lot of people.
Well, we always welcome your calls and comments about things that we talk about on the air. It's never too late. Give us a call, 1-877-929-9673, or send an email to words@waywardradio.org.
Hi, you have a way with words.
Hello, my name is Michael Harris, and I'm calling from Irving, Texas.
Hi, Michael. How are you?
Hi, Michael. What's up?
Hi. I'm doing just fine. Thank you. My question is about the word which is spelled L-L-A-M-A, llama, an animal which is common in Peru and I think native to South America. I've always pronounced this word llama because in my Spanish classes in school, I always learned that the double L in Spanish is pronounced like a Y, yeah. Like in the words tortilla, tomatillo, pollo, which means chicken, or caballero, which means gentleman.
Mm-hmm.
But ever since I saw a particular animated movie in 2000, the movie was The Emperor's New Groove, an animated movie. All throughout that movie, that word was pronounced llama. And I think in the movie, an emperor is turned into a llama. I don't remember exactly why or how, but anyway... All throughout that movie, that word was pronounced llama. So, I mean, in here living in Texas, I can accept the fact that an armadillo can that you can find an armadillo in Amarillo, but
good example.
Llama is just too much for me because I've always learned it was llama. So, how did this happen?
This is complicated.
Okay.
All right. Here's a couple things. The first one is that in Spanish, that double L is a single character, and that double L, you'll even find it alphabetized differently in Spanish dictionaries, if you remember. That double L has a bunch of different pronunciations depending upon the dialect of Spanish that you're speaking. All right? So in some places it is a Y sound.
In some places, in Spain and Mexico, for sure.
Some places it's more like a J, so they say llama. In some places it almost sounds like a D. A dama, llama. It's like you can actually feel your tongue kind of shift from the Y to the J to the D. It's just a little bit different on the mouth. And so the pronunciation that you learn in school, if you don't learn it natively in your household or on the streets, is going to be an approximation, kind of like the best case pronunciation of that word.
All right?
So there's not one fixed pronunciation of llama, and that's okay.
Okay.
The other thing is the word is the same case as armadillo. It's been fully anglicized. It is fully and completely adopted into English and is no longer a foreign word. You will find no source anywhere that does something like italicize it or put it in quotes to show that it's not native to English. And so the pronunciation is the L sound as far as most Americans are concerned. I don't know anybody that says it with the Y sound except if they're a Spanish speaker and that's what their particular dialect has to say. So I can get being a little annoyed if you learned it differently. Definitely when we're taught stuff in school and we hear something different, it takes a while to reconcile that, right?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
It can be a little bit of a stumbling block, right, Martha, to get over that thing that you learned and you believe and it seems so true and you're like, "Wait a second,
Oh my gosh, especially in terms of pronunciation.
Yeah,
and we hold so closely to that.
Yeah, well, yeah, because identity is closely bound to pronunciation. You know, it shows that we're a member of a group. But unfortunately, Michael, the pronunciation of llama is probably best is just a straight-up L sound. Now, if you go to parts of South America and Central America, you're going to be absolutely fine with your pronunciation.
Okay, well, thanks for talking me through it. I mean, I feel a little bit better about it now.
We talked you off the roof, right?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Hey, Mike, I have a question for you.
Yes.
What are we going to do about Vicuna?
Oh, that's a big one. Oh, you've given him something all new to worry about,
that's
Martha.
That's right. Forget the llamas. What about the vicuñas, you know?
Yeah, I know. Well, it's something new to think about, I guess.
Yeah, something to pass the hours.
Well,
right?
Michael, thank you for calling. It's a thoughtful question, and we're glad to answer it, all right?
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay.
Take care.
Adios.
Bye.
Bye-bye. We should probably go back and say that just because the movie did it that way, that's not what makes this right. Because big, big productions get things wrong. And professionals get things wrong all the time. Witness Martha and Grant.
Right. Exactly. I was going to say that. Yeah.
No, but I remember a drama that was done on the BBC, which is a highly professional organization. It was a radio show. So it's all about The Voice, right? And mm-hmm. it was about my hometown of St. Louis, where I was uh-huh. born. And through the entire drama, they pronounced it St. Louis.
Oh,
and
really?
I had to email them and say, you know what? That pronunciation is only a joke. We only say that in the song and only when we're kidding. Nobody in seriousness ever calls the town St. Louis.
Did they
and
write
so they
you
were
back?
Reading like they were reading this yeah, they did. They actually read my letter on the air. They were reading these dramatic letters from this woman. You know, it wasn't a comedy, you know, it was drama. They were reading these dramatic letters and she would say, I can't wait to see you in St. Louis. And I'm like,
she
would never say that. It was St. Louis. Or if in the St. Louis accent, she might actually say St. Louis, because that's how they say it. But anyway, so I just wanted to say to Michael, you know, you should always call those higher authorities into question.
Yes, and you should call us at 1-877-929-9673 or send your emails to words@waywardradio.org or pop by our discussion forum. That's at waywardradio.org/discussion.
Things have come to a pretty pass.
That's our show for this week. Support for our program comes from Mozy Online Backup. Got data? Visit mozy.com.
If you didn't get on the air today, you can leave us a message anytime. Call us at 1-877-929-9673.
Or email your questions to words@waywardradio.org. Or join the conversation right now on our discussion forum. You'll find it at waywardradio.org/discussion.
Stephanie Levine is our senior producer. Our technical director and editor is Tim Felton. Tim also engineered our theme music. Kurt Conan produced it.
We've had production help this week from Michael Bagdasian and Josette Hurdell. From the Argo Network in New York City, I'm Grant Barrett.
From Studio West in San Diego, I'm Martha Barnett.
So long.
Bye-bye.
Either, either, neither, neither. Let's call the whole thing off. You like potato and I like potato.
Hey, listeners, we have a favor to ask.
We'd love for you to fill out our listener survey at gum.fm/words.
Your feedback is crucial. It's quick, and it helps us make our show even better.
It shapes our show, helps us plan, and ensures we're bringing you the content you love.
That's gum.fm/words.
Thanks for being a part of what we do.
Thank you.